Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. In this episode of Evidence and Answers, Pat and his guest, public school teacher and apologist, Bill Westers, unpacks how modern public education promotes a secular, progressive worldview that challenges biblical beliefs. Today's show highlights how naturalism, critical theory, and social and emotional learning have become embedded in classrooms and offers parents and teachers strategies to prepare students to navigate these challenges with a strong Christian foundation. If you've missed any part of this broadcast, log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this discussion entitled The New Religion in Public Education, and you'll find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into the conclusion of this discussion.
Well, equality is good. It's, you know, everybody has the equal opportunities, right? Equity is equal outcome. And so everybody is somehow supposed to end up in the same place, regardless of their starting point. And so we, you know, their idea is that we have to elevate the voices, elevate the marginalized, and basically push down those who have done the marginalizing. And so the equity is that equal outcome, not based on merit, but simply based on where we all end up. And of course, you know, you can have two kids from the same exact family that end up in totally different places, and yet we're expected to have all of society be at the same level. You know, it's a utopian idea that Marxism brings in here, but nonetheless, I think if they just tear everything down, then something else will be built up that's better and based on that equity.
Yeah, so we're not talking equal opportunity. That's equality. Equity, right, is identical outcomes. That's what we're talking about here. And that leads into what you wrote about that dominates our public educational system, something called social and emotional learning. Tell us about that.
Yeah, social emotional learning is basically this program that, you know, everything today in public schools is framed in this idea of safety and belonging. If we go back to like what we were talking about earlier with this idea of naturalism, right? We have to frame everything in something that is very natural and factual sounding. And so without some sort of standard, that becomes, we have that natural thing where, if you ever heard of Abraham Maslow, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, well, it's all about human needs for human flourishing and achievement at some of the very basic foundational levels. Are things, of course, after physiological needs like food, water, and shelter, are things like safety, belonging, and security. And so those sound very natural, right? And so what social emotional learning does is it becomes in and is a way to hopefully try to achieve this sense of safety and belonging in the public schools. And so it's a program that's growing very rapidly in the United States, but it's based off this idea of healthy identities, managing emotions, feeling and showing empathy, and developing relational skills, and making responsible and caring decisions. Now, these are all very, very positive sounding things. And of course, every parent out there is thinking, well, who wouldn't want my kid to make responsible decisions and manage their emotions and have a healthy identity? But as C.S. Lewis puts it, the most dangerous ideas are not the ones being argued, but those that are being assumed. And so there's a lot of underlying issues here that we really have to have an understanding of and a definition of a lot of these terms. But what social emotional learning does is it comes in with as kind of a Trojan horse, because everybody with this, the language that they use, there's going to be very little opposition to anything that it sounds like that they want to do. And so they're bringing this into the public schools. But we talked about how it's based off of this neo-Marxist assumptions that they have underneath it. In fact, if you go to, there's a website called castle.org, it's C-A-S-E-L, org, and that's kind of like the main of foremost organization promoting social emotional learning. That's the Collaborative for Academic Social and Emotional Learning is what it stands for. But on their website, they have a key settings paragraph that says that inequities based on race, ethnicity, class, language, gender identity, sexual orientation, and other factors are deeply ingrained in the vast majority of these systems and impact student and adult learning. And so their idea is that they want to be able to interrupt these quote unquote inequitable policies and create a more inclusive environment and nurture the interests and assets of all individuals. And so you might recognize some of that language that we were just talking about with neo-Marxism. It's right there within a lot of that social emotional learning.
Yeah, Castle Five. I mean, there's key words in there: self-awareness, self-management. What are those key principles there? They sound good, but what are those key terms there?
Sure. There's on this Castle website, they have what they call the Castle Wheel, which is a diagram of concentric circles. If you think of like a small circle in the center, kind of rippling out from there. But at the very center, they have what you just mentioned, the Castle Five, which is their five core competencies that they hope to achieve. And as you said, there's self-awareness, self-management, responsible decision-making, relationship skills, and then social awareness. Well, the Castle Five can become quite problematic when you actually dig deep into what it is, because on the surface, like we mentioned, it sounds very positive. Well, take the first one, for example. Self-awareness is the abilities to understand one's own emotions, thoughts, and values, and how they influence behavior across contexts, and very positive, right? Of course, we want to be able to understand our own emotions and our thoughts and values and how they influence our behavior. Well, this becomes open, though, to teacher interpretation, because teachers have a certain amount of autonomy in the classroom. They don't have a principal or anybody kind of just breathing down their neck most of the time. They are able to kind of take what they have, and said the administration is saying, hey, we're using this social emotional learning, but then they're basically putting it in the teacher's hands about how they can incorporate that and when and what they're going to do with that. And so a teacher can take that idea, and many of them have already imbibed this idea of gender identity and some of the critical theories that we were talking about, and they just want to make kids feel safe. And so any kind of time a kid comes up with this idea that, self-awareness, well, what does that mean? Is that maybe that's good? Maybe I want to be aware of myself and my own emotions, but maybe it's little Susie realizing that she feels like a boy trapped in a girl's body. And we want to make her feel safe. So what do? We have to affirm, we have to participate in this social transitioning using pronouns and potentially even hiding it from their parents. And, it's because we view, schools view this as beneficial for mental health. And anything that they view today with such a mental health crisis is to be good for their mental health. Well, that's inherently, justified for implementation. And, we can go on to like, self-management is, can we talk about how you manage all that stuff that you, those emotions and feelings that we, you've kind of identified in under self-awareness. But one of the current trends is mindfulness meditation, is managing our emotions. Well, that has very Buddhist roots. And so, in fact, one of the professional developments we had recently at my school, we had a one of the workshops that teachers could choose to go to was actually called Yoga and Mindfulness in the Classroom. And we've even had administrators lead faculty through these mindfulness exercises and have talked about how they've done it with their students as well. In fact, we had one administrator use a Tibetan singing bowl, which, it's hard to deny that Buddhist origin there. And then the responsible decision making. Of course, we want our kids to make responsible decisions, right? But their idea there is curiosity and open-mindedness. In other words, like they want kids to think, well, maybe your parents have taught you this all along, but we want you to be open-minded and have a different view. And so the teachers become kind of like a guru in that sense of starting to get them thinking differently and be more open and susceptible to other ideas. Then we have relationship skills and social awareness, and that's kind of the biggest one right there. It's really kind of like the combination of all of these, but social awareness kind of brings in that idea of the abilities to understand the perspectives and empathize with others, including those from diverse backgrounds, cultures, and contexts. Well, again, beneficial things to do, to know how to do as a young person or even as an adult. But again, these teachers that have already imbibed this idea, they can leverage students' empathy and compassion in an effort to elevate the voices and what they would call the lived experience of those that they determine to be marginalized. And then they can lead them through these intersectionality workshops, types of exercises to identify, where they've been privileged and where they've oppressed others, and really focus and obsess over these differences between people. And it becomes real problematic, especially for Christians, where we know that we are all, there's one race, the human race, and God created man, humans, male and female. And there's just so much problematic things, ways that it's, social emotional learning, to summarize, basically, it's a tool. It could be used for good things. But if a teacher chooses to, they could use it for bad things, just like a hammer can be used to build, but it can also be used to destroy. And so it's all about how it's used.
Yeah, and the terms I keep hearing in our public educational system is tolerance, inclusion, equity. And really, the only thing you cannot do is, be, quote, intolerant. Say, no. There is such thing as absolute truth. And whatever goes against it would be false. If you came in and said, well, hang on, there's only two genders here, not 35, okay? And biology and gender do go together. So Susie, your biology says you're a woman, so you are a woman. Let's help you out here. Now that's wrong. It has to be tolerant, meaning nobody's right, nobody's wrong. Inclusion, therefore everybody's right, so we got to include everyone and make sure everyone feels like they're right, so they're comfortable, they're not offended. Those are kind of the buzzwords I'm hearing. Is that what you're hearing in the public schools with this?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, our school building goals right now are DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, is what the administration has decided that that's what we need to focus on right now. But really, what they mean by diversity is, and this is sad because diversity in their eyes is just the idea of surface level differences. What's the color of your skin? What gender or what you think you're, the real focus on identity groups, but they're not thinking about diversity of thought and inclusion. Well, we have to include everybody, but really what they kind of mean with that is you have to include, like, even if you don't believe that, you have to include them, and you have to affirm what they believe. And so, and if not, well, then you're not going to be included. And in fact, we even have in our job description, every job posting that my particular school posts on their website for an open position is a willingness and commitment to include equity, inclusion, and social justice in all practices. So it's right there, and it's like that idea of tolerance. We have to tolerate. Unless someone is intolerant, then you don't get to be tolerated.
Yeah, what you're talking about, we're seeing it here, on the West Coast, out here in the Pacific. And, as I speak and do ministry in Asia, I'm beginning to see it creep in Asia. So folks, what Bill is talking about here is not just the American thing. It is sweeping through, because this is what they're teaching in college, to the people who are going to be our teachers, and it just comes in. Well, Bill, I mean, man, we could go on for hours on this. Unfortunately, we can't, but what advice then would you give to Christian parents who have kids in the public schools?
Well, first of all, I want you to understand that teachers are not out to get people. They're even the most progressive. They genuinely care for kids. And so it's just how they do that, right? And what they mean by that, and what their anchor is and their standard of morality, because it's very different from what we as have with a Christian worldview. And so theirs is driven by this progressive, this leftist ideology and those critical theories that we were mentioning. So first of all, understand that they are well-meaning. It's just they don't have the right basis for it. But number two, because of all of this, even as a public high school teacher, it's very difficult for me to be able to even promote going to public schools. And so, you know, I'm there trying to do what I can to make a positive impact in my students' lives. But if, as a Christian parent, you know, my wife and I, we were kind of blindsided by all of this coming up, not realizing where public schools had gone. But I would encourage people to get out there and get out of the public schools if you can. Homeschool if you can. Send your kid to a vetted private Christian school if you can. But that stuff is expensive. Not everybody can do that. You know, we've had to put our kids into a charter school, which is still technically a public school. It's not perfect, but it's better than the state schools that we have. So number one, if you can get out, I would try to do that. But number two, not everybody can. Not everybody even has a second another option available to them. And so whether you do or don't, even if you homeschool, parents, we have to inoculate our children and equip them to deal with these bad ideas. Because even if we homeschool, even if we shelter them as long as we can't keep them from this. We have to prepare them for these ideologies that are going to be in their face through every kind of media that comes their way. So if we have to be involved in a public school, parents, we need to be involved in our kids' education. We need to read the assignments and the class notes. We need to pay attention to things like, you know, traditionally we've paid a lot of attention to science class, evolution and materialism and things like that. But it's crept in a lot more nowadays into the social studies, you know, how they teach history and the English language arts. Pay attention to what books your kids are reading and how they talk about those books in class and in assignments, and read those books with your kids.
Yeah.
And talk about them, you know, but pay attention to what's going on in the schools. Go to your parent teacher conferences, ask questions about the curriculum, and understand that teachers know what's controversial. So they're not always going to be overt with you, and they will use some of this co-opted language that we talked about, but ask for definitions. What do you mean by that? You know, what do you mean by safety and belonging, equity and inclusion? What do you mean by these things? And just listen, look for that language that we talked about and how it has a different meaning under the surface than what they promote it to be, or how it could be twisted by some teachers to actually come in as a Trojan horse and deceive your kids or even you about what's actually being taught.
Yeah, and go on websites like Encountering Truth and read those articles that are there and see what's going on. And perhaps you could have a parents gathering at your church, you know, and talk about some of these kinds of things in a little bit more safer arena than a public school, you know, parents meetings, where you can kind of prepare and get equipped on this kind of before you go into those meetings. Right. Well, Bill, as a teacher then, what advice would you give Christian teachers who are in the public schools? I mean, how do they thrive and be a light for Christ without losing their job?
That's a very good question, and something I think a lot of teachers are looking for answers on. You know, number one, keep going and remember the impact that you have on the kids. Don't give in to the social pressure where we're bombarded with these progressive ideologies left and right, just as a culture in general, but especially in the public schools as teachers. And, you know, one of the things I always say is that familiarity breeds acceptance. And so this, when we're exposed to something, become familiar with it, we start to accept it. And you have to hold up your guard against that and stand true on biblical truth and what you know. And don't just go along. I always ask those questions, like, what do you mean by that? Because, you know, when I first started hearing about social emotional learning, I thought, well, this is actually a good thing. We have this mental health crisis in our youth today, and this would be a great answer to that. But you have to look at it from a biblical worldview. When you start to have some red flags go up, you know, you have to start, you know, talking to administrators. What do we mean by this? You know, kind of research things for yourself, read those articles, listen to those podcasts, and kind of get what is this really all about? And don't just go along with something just because it sounds good at first.
Yeah. And, you know, in the best way that you can, as you said, you know, with truth, with love and integrity, talk to the administration, and you got to be courageous about it. You may lose your job, you know, yeah. But if you do it with love, I mean, if you're a jerk about it, well, maybe you deserve to lose your job. But if you do it with love and integrity and concern, I think most principals will listen to you. And especially if, yeah. you know, you've been a teacher there with a good record, you know, I think they'll lend you an ear. They won't just shut you down. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the school. Like yeah. you mentioned, this is, you know, in all schools, because it's kind of what's being taught at the university level. So people that go to school for the education to become a teacher, well, that's kind of being taught to them. And so sadly, some of them are ending up in some of the Christian schools mm-hmm. as well. So I would encourage you to vet those. But, you know, some schools, maybe more rural schools, are not going to be as influenced by these things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in a very progressive school, very liberal school. So there is a lot that I have to be careful about what I say. In fact, who knows, one of these days that, you know, something comes up that I say that they don't like too much and, you know, they want to let me go. But I think a lot of, if you go about it the right way, and someone had told me before, you know, you'll be surprised what you can get away with by asking questions.
Right.
And, you know, if you just ask questions as opposed to coming out with this is what we need to do and have a whole list of complaints, you ask questions. Is this really the best way to go about this? You know, talk to your principal that way. I think there would be a lot more acceptance to that approach than there would just be outright complaining and in your face action type of behavior.
Yeah, well, you know, as we close the show now, maybe this may not be a fair question. Maybe I'm asking you to be a prophet or something. You got a picture, maybe a sense of where you think public education is going to be going? Is it going to increase in its hostility towards Christian values and the Christian worldview? Or do you see positive change come in? What do you see?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, well, you know, you have the possibility of the Department of Education being eliminated. And I'm hopeful because I think there's a lot of things that are being seen, you know, after, you know, people saw what was going on in the classrooms when we were locked down for COVID, and people saw on these screens finally what their kids were learning.
Yeah.
And so a lot of reaction. But on the other hand, there's been so much polarization that the one side has doubled down on that progressive ideology. And so, you know, I'm hopeful. My prayer and I, you know, something I've been thinking about is, you know, I would love to see ways for more people to either strongly stand up and reform the public schools and say, hey, this is not neutral. By eliminating Christianity and then just teaching naturalism and critical theories and stuff, that's not neutral. And so this is religious in nature. Maybe this type of thing has to get out. You know, I would love for a way for Christian parents that really don't have the finances that they can somehow find a way to have more access to Christian education as well. And so it's a hard thing to say because there's a lot of uncertainty right now when it comes to what's happening in education, but something's happening, something's moving. And my hope and prayer is that it's in a good, godly direction.
Great. You've been listening to our interview with Bill Westers. He's founder of Encountering Truth. Bill, if people want more information on you and the resources that you offer, where can they go?
Well, our website is encounteringtruth.org. And you can find all of our podcasts there or on any other major platform, including Spotify and YouTube, Apple Podcasts. And you can also follow us on Facebook as well.
That's a great resource for you there. So remember, those of you that are in public education or get involved in your child's education, and Encountering Truth is a great resource for you there. So Bill, thanks for being with us here on Evidence and Answers. I'm sure we will hear from you again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.